So I don't think the future is for a never-ending, more expensive radio. There'll always be guys who want the most expensive radio. There's always going to be the guys who want the shiniest thing. But I think a lot of this is going to bleed down to the general public and give them a very good, high-performance, relatively low-priced devices to use. I think we are already seeing it, although there's a lot of inflation. You know, the price of transceivers have not gotten terribly expensive. Most transceivers that are new, that are being manufactured, are being sold for, you know, under $2,000, some around $1,000. So I think the future is bright, personally.
KD2FYU, please.
Yes, George.
They're not repairable.
Well, some are, some aren't. It sort of depends, but that's the future of technology. Even if we say with legacy, the tendency seems for surface-mounted devices, packing them as tightly as possible. From the commercial side, they're smearing a lot of glue in there, so you can't even take the damn things apart. So the right to repair seems to be evaporating. So this seems to be just a general trend in technology, not anything specific to our hobby.
With the Chinese radios aside, because that is a different interjection into the market. That has a different purpose altogether into the market. Look at what's happened in the automobile industry. What happens? You change out huge sections. There's no repairing a fender door, two doors, or two fenders of the side of a car. You change them. There's no repairing the frame once it's been damaged. They scrap the car. $20,000, $30,000, $10,000 for a small accident. Now, what happens with radios that we get with surface components? You just change boards. You change sections of the radios. You don't prepare different components in the radios anymore. So this is the entire way industry is going. And we've got to accept this as radio operators, and we have. By buying Chinese radios we throw out? Wow. They got us.
I think it's really about what a person wants. You know, they get an expensive radio, they want to talk to their friends about it, they want to brag about it, they want to play around with it sometimes. Question is, you know, can you get something much less and create a big fulfillment out of it? Maybe an expensive radio can bring a lot of fulfillment.
I was talking about industrial durability.
I was talking about what Roy was talking about before you talked about industrial or whatever.
Well, guys, I really appreciated the conversation, the participation. Unfortunately, George, at least as far as I can see, this is not just us poor hams. This is the entire country. We're a disposable economy right now. I don't know what you can do to change that. I don't think there's much. It's just the nature of things, and so it's not particularly in my mind that amateur radio is leading the world into disposable equipment. It's just following along in the long trail of all the other manufactured goods that have become, unfortunately, disposable. Technicians don't repair things. They throw them out. They swap parts. This has been going on for many years, unfortunately, and probably will get worse. But we're not going to solve that problem tonight. So once again, want to thank everyone that participated and hope that you'll come back next Sunday when we'll try and do it again. Hopefully there'll be people with some questions out there, a few more than we had tonight. But still, I think it's 10:20. It's a good time for the Space Net Report with Paul WS2N.
AC2GS, WS2N. Very good, Roy. Interesting topics. Okay. I just wanted to start off the SpaceNet report with one particular interesting topic that I came across on a website, physics.org, all about a bone marrow project that the International Space Station has been involved in for quite some time. Like the, they've known this from the beginning, that when an astronaut goes up to space, in the first week or so, they start noticing that they become more anemic. They start, the red blood cells start going down in number. So they tend to destroy them. They figured out it's over 50%, after about a week or so. Over 50% are being destroyed. You're manufacturing new ones, but you're getting 50% less as time goes on. And at one time they thought, after about 10 days or so, that this would balance out, that, that number would change and they would be okay. They noticed that as they come back to Earth, a lot of them are pretty much on the anemic side. So they're trying to figure out what caused this. So, the ideal way would be to take their blood like every day and test it. But, that would be, impossible to do. So what they did is they decided to take a group of astronauts that keep going up to the space station. There's about 14 of them that they did a study on. Waiting for a tone.
RLC,
no. Okay, we got IRLP back. Anyway, way that they decided to do it is they sent a gadget up to this International Space Station where you could just breathe into it. You check how much carbon monoxide you're exhaling. They, for every red blood cell that's destroyed, carbon monoxide blood cell gets created. And somewhere along this website, they said there was 2 million in the average person, 2 million blood cells are created every second, and that same amount is supposed to be being destroyed, which, is a normal situation, but in space, it's 54% difference. So, instead of creating, for every 2 million that they're creating, 3 million are being destroyed on the astronauts. So in the long run, this could help people on Earth that are anemic, and they plan on doing, more studies with this. The idea of just blowing into this thing and getting some kind of a test, I thought was pretty interesting. And they've been doing this for quite a while now. And the results are starting to come in, and again, they thought at one time, this was balancing out. It's not balancing out. It's getting worse over time, 6 months or a year. Could be a real problem if you go like a year. And it's going to take, 6 months or so to get to Mars. Who knows how many problems you could have even going to the moon. It's, 1/6 the gravity of Earth. It's not microgravity, but, that problem still might exist there. Would you be able to spend years on end on the moon without becoming anemic? Who knows? Anyway, these studies will try to find an answer for that. And any questions? And let me just see if I got any of this right by, I'm sure not a doctor. But we have one here. Roy, AC2GS, WS2N.
Yes, what's the question, Paul?
Does that sound all about right, where, they have this machine where you blow into it and wind up with a reading checking your carbon monoxide level, and that's going to show that you're decreasing, it would show if it's normal or not normal for a blood count, for a red blood count, anyway. Like they said in the article, for every cell or red blood cell that's destroyed. I think they use the word HEMR or H-E-M-R. Anyway, the dark part of the blood cell. For every cell that's destroyed, one carbon monoxide, not dioxide, but monoxide, would be created. So they're blowing into this thing up in the International Space Station to get their readings on a regular basis. And does that sound right to you? Back to you.
KD2FIU.
George, 1 second. Let me just finish, and then Paul could call on you. I don't know how that would possibly work. You could certainly measure the amount of carbon monoxide in your breath. Carbon monoxide bonds to hemoglobin molecules in red blood cells, but there's more than one. So, you know, if that red blood cell has been exposed to carbon monoxide, then there would be a lot of carbon monoxide molecules. So I'm not quite sure how that really works.
Okay. You know, that's why I'm asking you. The website, physics.org, I sent this particular story to you. So when you get a chance next week or something, you know, you can go through it. It's a long story. And they show a picture of one of the women astronauts. She's got this thing that she blows into on the space station. So that, apparently that's how they're getting these readings. So, you know, okay. I just wanted to take this whole story with a grain of salt until kind of confirm it. George, over to you. KD2FIU, WS2N.
Thank you, Roy. Hi, Paul. Have any studies have been done on Earth here in the chambers that prepare astronauts? Not really sure exactly what's going on, but whether it's the right compression, whether it's the right anti-gravity, whether it's the right pressure, or whether it's whatever has to do with the studies of what they're going to endure in that kind of environment. What any studies done in applicable testing done here on Earth?
Well, I know they've done plenty of different studies, but not for testing blood in, you know, over a week or so in a microgravity environment. You know, you can't duplicate that here. Oh, you can go up in a Vomit Comet, you know, and do parabolic arcs for, you know, every time you're coming down, you know, or you're getting to the peak, plane would fly, you know, you'd get 20 or 30 seconds of gravity, you know, no gravity. That's not enough time to do any kind of blood test or breathing test to duplicate this. This happens after, you know, a few days on the space station. So as far as I know, that's the only way to test it. They did make a point that, you know, you can't really test your blood every day. I mean, they've done plenty of blood tests up there, but this type of test would have to be done apparently often to get that kind of data out of it. So, yeah. I'll keep my eye on this. It's a NASA program. It's called MARO, the MARO Project, on a space station. Back to you, George.
So, yeah, thank you, Paul. So what I'm getting at is, so we don't have the, let's say, recreation or laboratory capabilities, or we do, or they haven't tested for that for here on Earth, to simulate what it's like to be to that extent.
No, they can't because of the gravity situation. They do know that people that lay around in beds, you know, if you're hospitalized for very long periods of time, you tend to become anemic. So to find out why this is happening in space, maybe get an answer, it might eventually help the people on Earth. At one time, they used to believe that, by going into space, all the liquids in your body tend to go up, you look at the astronauts, they always look on the heavy side. You look at them before they go up, they might have a thin-looking face or a thin-looking neck. They get into space, they're always on the heavier side. The fluids are rising up in their body, and they thought that that might have something to do with it. And now they say that that's not it. You know, exactly what's going on, I don't know. You know, maybe it has something to do with, you know, your bone marrow itself, like the project is named after, you know, I know your T cells and stuff, you know, they're supposed to manufacture all this stuff, white blood cells, platelets, red blood cells and stuff. So maybe, you know, I think over time they'll start to come up with more answers. You know, the space station is good up until 2030, so they have plenty of time to study that. And after that, I'm sure there'll be commercial space stations, even at the end of the life of the International Space Station. Any other comments? Paul? Yes, Roy?
Yeah, I did some quick reading here. Basically, what it amounts to is it's not every red blood cell gives off a carbon monoxide. It's every heme molecule in the red blood cell that gives out a carbon monoxide. So it's part of the disposal mechanism. When red blood cells turn over, they generate a carbon monoxide molecule. So that's how they're using it to infer the excessive turnover rate of red blood cells in the body.
Oh, okay. Okay, so that's they're on track. The idea is a new gadget to test in space on a regular basis. It's real easy to do this. And I don't know. One day, I think they might come up with an answer for this. There's a lot of medical studies being done. I think since the space station has been up there, they said there's over 3,000 medical tests that they've done, different types of medical tests, different problems you might have. I guess anemia definitely would be one of them. Wonder if you could have a reverse problem, you know, too many red blood cells, you know, shoot those people into space and maybe they'll be better off instead of just taking medication. Any other comments?
Oh, no, negative, leukemia.
Okay, what about leukemia?
Don't mess with the blood cell counts.
Okay, well, that sounds like that's what we're doing here. We're talking about the red blood cell count, George. I mean, they're actually messing with them by sending these people up to space for long periods of time.
This is why I'm so interested, Paul. Thank you for the whole report. Thank you very much. KD2FIU.
Paul?
Okay, George. And yeah, if I see a reputable site, I know physics.org is pretty good. And of course, the NASA sites and all. Yes, Roy, back to you.
Yeah, there actually is a condition called polycythemia where you produce a lot of red blood cells. And one of the treatments tends to be bloodletting. You know, in the old days, everything was bloodletting. So this is one of the few cases where bloodletting has some effect.
Okay. Okay, Roy. Very well aware of that topic. But okay, I'll get off the medical end of it. That you know, I was going to rely on your. If you were in that control, I would not bring this topic up because I am totally lost when it comes to you know, the medical field. That's what doctors do. The worst thing to do is to be your own doctor. That I figured out.
Yeah, you shouldn't be your own doctor and you shouldn't be your own lawyer.
I concur, Roy. Okay, very good. Okay, on to a different topic. A couple days ago, the Falcon 9 rose into the sky again from Florida. And this time it brought up 105 satellites at one time. Now, these satellites are not the broadband satellites that they keep doing. They've literally brought up over 3,000 of those satellites, the ones for broadband. Every month they launched another Starlink satellite around 50 or more broadband satellites. But no, this is a different one. This is a rideshare, 105 satellites, big and small, that they launch from Florida. And over time, over many, many hours, they would release the another satellite. Some of them are CubeSats, some are a little bit bigger than that. But out of that group, there were, out of the 105, there were four of them that were amateur satellites. The Hades satellite, another one called Tevlel, BVL4, number five. So these satellites, I have their frequencies and all of them. Some of them, I guess, are transponders. But out of 105, I mean, there is so many different companies really around the world that sign up for these ride-sharing missions. You know, it's amazing to think that, 105 satellites at one shot, every one of them got different frequencies they're using, different mission controls around the world, controlling them, studying them. Some of them are in, relatively low orbit, so they might only stay up for, months at a time and eventually deorbit. Some of them are going to be up there for years. So, anyway, that was successful. They launched, on a Falcon 9. The booster itself came back and landed back at Cape Canaveral. And that was successful. It's the 10th time that particular booster has launched. And it comes back, does a burn, boost back burn. It goes up with 9 engines and separates from the second stage. The second stage goes on and puts the 105 satellites eventually into orbit. But that booster comes back with the 9 engines, flips around in space, does a 180, it uses a little nitrogen gas, and then it fires 3 of the 9 engines and actually pushes itself back toward Cape Canaveral. And then it starts coming down through the atmosphere, tail first. Eventually, they light off the same 3 engines again, slow it down as it's going through atmosphere, but try to protect the engines from, from actually burning up from excessive heat. This thing is going thousands of miles an hour. And then it slows down even more, and eventually gets down to the pad LZ-1, landing zone 1, they call it, right on the eastern end of Cape Canaveral. And they showed pictures of the thing coming through the air. The last 20 seconds or so, the center main engine comes on out of the 9 and slows down. It gimbals, it moves back and forth, and right dead center. They have an X on this concrete pad, dead center. I know they've done this many, many times before, but it's the first time I've seen it done in 6 months. That was the last time they came back. Most of the times they land on the ships out at sea. But when the payload is light enough, they could do this because they'll have more fuel left over to actually do a boost back burn to return back to Cape Canaveral. If not, they if it's a heavier load, they need that fuel to get that payload into space, and the first stage will actually come back and land on the on a drone ship. It's commonplace now. I know 134 now consecutive launches that SpaceX has done with their Falcon 9. But they're doing very good. Let me drop it, see if anybody has any questions. I'll drop it for a few more seconds because I heard IRLP and maybe Echo Link is working. Let me just stand by. WS2M. Nothing heard. Haven't heard from Frank in a long time from Philadelphia. Okay, here's another interesting topic. This year we're supposed to have the SLS go up, the Space Launch System that NASA's been building for many, many years. It poured about almost $11 billion into this project. Between that and the Orion spacecraft that's going to be put on top of it, eventually you'll have a crew of four going to the moon. First crew will orbit the moon, come back. Next crewed flight will eventually land on the moon. That's the present plan anyway. But first they have to launch an unmanned vehicle, the exact same, you know, as if there was a crew in there. They're going to have an Orion capsule put on top, and it's going to fly to the moon, it's going to orbit the moon, and then return to Earth. The Orion capsule will enter the atmosphere and land in the Pacific Ocean, and it will be picked up by a ship. But what NASA has done, they are going to fly Alexa to the moon in this capsule. They're calling it the Callisto Project. Anyway, Callisto is the name they're going to use. Basically, they're taking Alexa, they're putting it into the spacecraft, you know, where the crew would be. They have a video screen, audio. They're going to have it tied into some of their systems. They might have it tied into the telemetry or the orientation system. They might have it tied into a water supply, battery voltage, amperage, and that type of thing. And what mission control plans on doing, as things flying through space for 3 or 4 days to orbit the moon, eventually come back, they'll be able to talk to an empty spacecraft. You know, they'll be able to say, Alexa, or I think they're going to use the word Callisto. But anyway, they'll say something like Callisto, or, what's the battery voltage? What will happen? They'll actually get an answer. You'll hear an audio voice inside this unmanned craft. And, it'll tell you, our bus voltages are now, still 28 volts. All is well or something. They'll be able to actually see. They're going to be transmitting pictures to and from the spacecraft as well. And when it's all done, they're going to actually take another camera inside Orion that will document all this and retransmit it back to Mission Control to see what a crew would have seen. So that's the present plan. I'm sure that they'll probably change it one way or another, but that's the general idea what they're going to try to do with the first mission. It was scheduled for this spring, and still scheduled for this spring, but I could see the way it's going. I wouldn't be surprised if it's summertime before this thing gets off the ground. Should be pretty exciting. 8.5 million pounds of thrust just to get off the launch complex. It's launch complex 39B, not 39A. 39A they turned over to SpaceX. The 39s were always used for big missions like the Apollo Saturn missions, for the 135 shuttles that went up. They either went off from Launch Complex 39A or 39B. And anyway, NASA is the dedicated launch 39B for any space launch system. They plan at least one a year as time goes on with a crew of four. See how it goes. But I thought this was an interesting thing. There are satellites that are going to be going up. 13 actual satellites will be going up on this flight as well, and which will not orbit the Earth, but maybe orbit to the moon, or some of them I think are going to go into heliosynchronous orbit. See, Alexa on board, first unmanned space launch system, the Orion, should be interesting. Any comments? WS2N. Okay, nothing heard. I've been talking about James Webb for seems like years now. There is one other telescope that just went up in the beginning of December. December 9th it actually launched. This is the IXPE telescope, or the Imaging X-ray Polarimeter Explorer telescope. They're going to look at the universe in X-ray. We've had X-ray telescopes go up before, including one that's been operating since the late 1990s called Chandra. Chandra is still operating. There's another one, but The difference is this one's going to check polarization. I haven't had time to research why polarization is important for figuring out what, you know, what's coming out of, you know, galaxy or that supernova or, you know, what have you. Apparently it's going to give scientists some information that they never had before. Anyway, this thing was also launched on a SpaceX rocket, and got up to a perfect zero inclination orbit right around the equator, where they wanted maybe around 350 miles high. It's not a big telescope. It only weighs around, I think, 700-800 pounds. Not very big in diameter, only about maybe 3.5 feet in diameter, and about 17 feet long. This boom in between, you know, where the detectors are, where the mirrors are, and the detectors are 17 feet apart, and went up in this, you know, tight fit when it went up on the spacecraft, and it opened up, and everything worked out fine. It had no suspension. They spent the last month or so calibrating it. And the reason I'm talking about it now again is because it is now in operation. Again, this polarization is important. Now, if I find details, or if you guys find details of why that's important, I'll cover that on a future net. Any comments? WS20. Okay. SpaceX Dragon coming back, not with the crew, but cargo, and that will be returning in a couple of days on the 21st, plan on separating from the International Space Station. Right now it's hooked up to the front end of the Harmony module. That will be coming back. We've got all kinds of science projects on board that have to be returned to the scientists. Right now, the only way that we have to get large amounts of cargo or data or scientific information back on the Dragon cargo vehicle. So it's going to be coming back with almost 5,000 pounds worth of stuff. There's a list of it, but, you know, they do this. They load it up with tons of equipment. Sometimes it's spacewalk of the things that are broken that need to be sent back or something like that. Thousands of pounds worth of stuff. And medical. Tons of medical stuff. The cargo vehicle has refrigeration equipment on board. They have freezers that, you know, go down, you know, hundreds of degrees below zero. They stuff and most days are operational. Lands in the water. At that point, it's on battery. Pick it up right away, and this way, nothing defrosts, and scientific equipment that has to get back to the scientists can get back real quick. Because they land in the Atlantic Ocean, they have, SpaceX has their own ship. They pick up the cargo vehicle right out of the water, and then they're able to fly the equipment that's inside the spacecraft back on a helicopter real quick back to Florida, where the scientists can get a hold of it. So that's coming up. Again, it's about the 23rd cargo flight that SpaceX has done to, you know, gone to the space station with. Made a lot of flights. The earlier flights used to have solar panels. They don't have them anymore. They've done away with that. Now the solar panels are attached to the body or the trunk of the spacecraft. You know, time marches on, and by doing that, they reduced weight. Now they're able to carry more payload either up or back from the space station. Okay, Launcher 1 is another rocket that has been successful lately. It just flew Thursday. Third time to make it to orbit by Virgin Orbital. Virgin Orbital is really a subcontractor to Virgin Galactic. Virgin Galactic, owned by Richard Branson, Ivanov, Virgin Orbital, and you know, they developed this rocket called Launcher 1, they call it, and they attach it to the left wing, port wing of 747, and they drop it at, you know, they go up 8 miles high, 40,000 feet in the air, and they drop it. 5 seconds later, the first stage ignites, and three-stage rocket called Newton engines. Newton engine fires, first stage, second, third stage, and it launched successfully and put 7 satellites into orbit. You know, the question was asked, well, why don't these people who are launching these satellites wait for a rideshare mission? Because they have a system with the airplane, they don't have to wait for a rideshare mission. You might, you know, like the last one that went up was 105 satellites. You have to wait for this flight. That might take forever before 105 satellites are ready to go. Now you might need this one satellite, or in this case 7, to be launched pretty much immediately. And also with the rideshare missions, you're governed to, you know, one elevation, one inclination, you know, maybe, 20 degrees above the equator. This one, they could choose whatever one they wish, and in this case, they chose 45 degrees inclination, which has never been done from California before. In this case, the 747 plane with the Launcher 1 rocket attached to it took off from California, Mojave in California, and flew out, way out over the Pacific Ocean, and then was able to come back, going east, and then they were able to drop the rocket and let it take off that way. And because they went so far out, if something went wrong, and the rocket, you know, decided to screw up and crash, it would crash back into the Pacific Ocean. If you had a regular rocket, you know, a vertical takeoff rocket from Vandenberg Air Force Base, you couldn't get that 45-degree inclination. You know, you would take off, and if you started heading even a little bit west, people in L.A. or, you know, or Nevada and Reno or something, they would be a little upset thinking that this thing could come down on them. But this is a new way that they could do that. Yeah, you could launch from Cape Canaveral and get 45 degrees if you want, but, you know, they want, you know, there's a lot of these missions could now be taking place from either Cape Canaveral with this jet or anywhere. They plan on eventually, they have a couple of flights. They plan on going to Scotland and launching from that country, you know, with the Virgin Orbital system. So, you know, you have a lot of small satellite providers now doing this. Now you have Orbital doing this.
Complete.
Electron rocket being launched by Rocket Lab, launching out of New Zealand, and I believe this year, probably within a couple of months, they'll be launching out of Virginia, Wallace Island, Virginia. And maybe, you know, 500 or 1,000-pound satellites. But, you know, you could choose when you're going to launch and what inclination you're going to go to without waiting. A lot of missions on these people's manifest. Another company now, Astra. Astra successfully launched their first rocket with 4 shots. Four different tries over a couple of months. Started in 2016, and in November they launched from Kodiak, Alaska, and they made it to orbit. Now they're confident enough to try Florida. Looks like maybe in next month. They predicted the end of this month, possibly the end of this month. We'll see. Astra will launch from Cape Canaveral. Now would be another small launch provider that we could add to the list. A couple more coming up this year. Firefly, I'm sure will be, will probably make it to orbit this year. A couple more coming down the road, probably with another year or so, maybe 2023, you might have relativity. And we're going to get to the point where I'm not going to be able to keep up with all these different launches for the net. Any comments or questions? WS2N. Okay, we're running out of time. Didn't have that much more. Russia did an EVA, two cosmonauts last week. They were setting up the their end of the space station. Eventually, more docking that will be occurring, either with their Progress cargo vehicles or more crew vehicles coming up. Things are looking up for the people in the space industry, from what I see. Any other comments or questions? If not, I'm looking at the time. We'll come to a grinding halt, and we'll turn it back to Roy if there's no... Any other questions? I guess not. Ham Radio University was last week, and now Ham Radio University has released their, well, probably not all, but most of the classes that they had. You know, they're all recorded, and now they have a Ham Radio University channel, YouTube channel, where you can go to, and I already looked at a couple of them. I actually went to the one of them that was live, that was the one on software-defined radios, too. That was pretty good. That was on the actual day, but now all of those are now on YouTube. You can go to that, so you bring up Ham Radio University channel, and you can scan through all the different things that they have. It's really pretty good. And that's pretty much it. Tomorrow night is Club InfoNet on these repeaters at 8:30, not 8 o'clock. Followed by George, KD2FYU, with the Swapper Chop, and then it's always followed by Newsline. Over to you, Roy, AC2GS. This is WS2N for the Space Night Report for the TechNet. Back to you, Roy.
Very much, Paul. This is AC2GS. Thanks for the SpaceNet report. Thanks for your help with the TechNet in general, and thanks always for all that you do for this club. Everyone appreciates it. I want to thank everyone who participated in tonight's Slugfest. I hope you learned a few things. I hope you were reminded of a few things. I want to remind people the usual links. If they will want to send me a mailbag question or a topic for, or even better, a puzzle, you can send me, my email is mailbag@ac2gs.com. If you want to, you could also send me something to resend to Paul, but if you'd like to send it to Paul directly, his email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. My link page is available. Check it out when you have nothing better to do. It's had some fun, interesting links. That's available by typing into your browser, roy.ac2gs.com. And, of course, keep in mind the Mike KC2NJI's great archive of the technical net. The website is amateurradio.tv. It has over a million different visitors, so please, check it out and listen to a couple of the old tech nets. He has them going back to September of 2006. So as Dick would often end these technical nets, please be kind to each other. It's good advice in general. It's great advice right now. Hopefully coronavirus has kind of peaked in New York City. I think the rest of the country, unfortunately, is going to go a little bit longer before it finds its peak. Please take care of yourself, take care of each other, get vaccinated, get boosted, do all the right things, social distance, be well, stay warm, stay dry. This is AC2GS formally closing this episode of the Limark Technical Net, and I am clear.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the WGAL repeater.
The time is 12:04 a.m. 73 and good night from the W2VL repeater. The time is 12:04 a.m. 73 and good night from the W2VL repeater. This is the W2VL repeater. Good morning. The time is 12:10 a.m.
67 wireless communication fired by the Agri by only to gun for a service link covered costs for hiring of people for them and upgrading on for a service.
The time is 12:11 a.m. 73 and good night from the W2VL repeater. The time is 12:11 a.m. 73 and good night from the W2VL repeater. That tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater. This is the W2VL repeater. Good morning. The time is 12:40 a.m.
Amateur Radio Newsline report number 2307 with a release date of Friday, January 14th, 2022, to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2. Following is a QST. The pandemic cancels a major DX convention. Amateurs prep for Winter Field Day and an Olympic achievement for amateur radio. All this and more as Amateur 2307 comes your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, amateur radio's independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, reporting from Union, Kentucky, here's Neil Rapp, WB9VPG.
This week with news of yet another pandemic-related cancellation. Responding to concern over the freezing this time of year and snow and ice can ISA. Congratulations to on Twitter or Instagram using the hashtags. The National Science Foundation has just and with a story about one Olympic event.
The time is 12:43 a.m. 73 and good night from the W2VL repeater. The time is 12:43 a.m. 73 and good night from the W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the WGAL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the WGL repeater.
This is the W2VL repeater. Good morning. The time is 5 o'clock a.m.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the WGL repeater.
W2VL.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the
W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the
W2VL.
And right 2H.
W2.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the WGL repeater.
WBTCS.
W2VL. Good morning.
Had to wait for the commercial.
Good morning. So if I leave shortly, I might actually get there around the time you get there.
You know, maybe. Maybe before. I don't know. I got to stop and pick some stuff up on the way. But, still raining.
First question, did you get my message? MS Edit?
No, apparently not.
It was a dual-pronged message. I sent it by text and by snail, email. Can you bring MS Edit and a cable so we can install it on the Windows computer over there, and I also can get some codes down?
I probably have the software with me, and I'm trying to remember if that was a 32-bit OS. I think it is. I don't have a cable except for the one with my laptop, although you can use the same cable that goes into the controller. Just disconnect it, plug it in, since you're going to have to use the same port anyway.
Use here.
I dropped out. I'll tell you what, let me go in and get a coffee, Lope.
NY2, I
just... WB2, yes.
I reckon my dream would clear here at the 22.
MS Edit on my my USB drive.
Alright. I think I tamed IRLP. I put it on steroids and antibiotics, and it's been up for 7 hours already.
Okay, well, there you go.
Yeah. Learn while you earn, but don't earn. Alright. Alright, well, I'm finishing a cup of coffee, playing a little video game. I had to get up early this morning. I get a... My granddaughter calls me at 3:30 a.m. Her mom was coming in from Florida, so I had to pick her up at Islip Airport. She said when they were ready to fly out of Orlando, there was no pilot. You can't fly without a pilot. So they wanted the people to sit on the plane, but the people revolted and said, no, we're not sitting on this plane for hours, give each other COVID and all that. So they left, finally got a flight out. Then she said he couldn't land. It was pouring like crazy. I was on the road 3:30. Man, you could hardly see. It was raining sideways. And, you know, and then she couldn't get an Uber. Well, I wouldn't have wanted to take an Uber anyway. But so that was it. So I got up, picked her up, came home, went back to sleep. And then Alexa nudged me this morning and said, get up. So here I am.
Yeah. Well, you know, life is like that. Let's see. Let's take a quick stop over in Westbury.
Good morning, WA2CDL. I just got up.
Wipe that sleep from your eyes, my man.
Well, I was up part of the night. I thought maybe my antennas were going to fall down with all that wind.
Never a dull moment, right?
Yes. Are you still going up today, Steve?
Well, that's why I'm on the road. I thought I'm supposed to meet you at 9.
Okay. That's why I got on the air, to see if you're going to be on the road, to see if you're going to meet me.
Alrighty, you guys keep chatting. I'm going to put my shirt on, and I'm going to point my car west, NY2H.
Okay. Yeah, Andy, I would have called you. Anyway, why don't you get yourself going? I assume you have a few things to do.
You're going to call me, you said?
No, I said I would have called you had I had a change.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. I found that cable. I was last night. You know that cable that you made for the comparator. Yeah, it was in my computer bag. I had to think for a second, but I have to go into the garage and get that plate, that panel, and see if I have a length of wire that you need, and then I got to put the comparator in. What, anything else to bring?
Well, I got my tools. I was debating on the service monitor because I didn't take the case with me. Maybe we'll pull up underneath and unload and load there.
You think Andy would have that cable for the MS edit?
I have no idea. It's just a serial cable, male to female.
Do we have a serial port on that Windows machine?
Isn't that how you talk to the controller?
So we could use that cable then, right? The one from the controller.
It's a matter of reaching, but electrically, yes.
All right, Andy, do you have another serial controller? I'm sorry. Serial cable, that we extension cable? No male on one end, female on the other?
Excuse me, I'll be back in a minute. WB2CSE.
Yes, I do. Is this cable just going to be used up there, or is it going up there permanently?
No, we just want to use it today. Give it back to you.
Okay, because I use it for work. I have one. I guess it's long enough. I actually have two of them. I think they're exactly the same.
I'd appreciate it if you could bring them along. I don't know what you have to do to make sure that happens. Tie one to your leg or throw it in your car or put it on your... I put my keys. Normally when I have to take something, I pair them with my car keys. This way I don't forget.
No, it's already in my computer bag. I never took it out, so I could just bring the whole bag with me. And, you know, because it's male to female, I can connect them together end to end and make them longer if you need longer lengths.
Right, that's why I was hoping you'd bring both of them. All right. Very good. All right, let me get going here because I'm going to be last furthest out. Okay. Said before, NY2H.
All right, well, I just got up, so I got a couple of things to take care of. I was up, yeah, I was actually up last night, because of the wind, making sure everything was okay, and it was. All right, see you later. Steve, you still there?
Yeah, I don't know what time you turned the radio on, but did you hear my airport story? I was up 3:30 in the driving in the wind and rain.
I just heard that, yeah, you just mentioned it about 2 minutes ago.
Hi, Don. I wasn't sure if you heard it.
Hi.
Later. NY2H, clear.
Okay, by the way, I found, just to let you know, I mentioned on the repeater on our frequency out east. Now, there's another repeater on this frequency that I found also in New Jersey, which I could also get into. And that's even further west. And, you know, which is interesting. So I'll tell you about that one. I can get into it, so that's pretty good, too.
Affirmative.
All right, see you later. WHCDL, I'm going to get up.
On keyboards up there?
We have a conventional keyboard, mouse